Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 10th, 2017.
Already in high school, young women are receiving implicit and sometimes explicit messages that they are less able or less capable to engage in politics.
A local grassroots organization is working to install confidence and skill in young women with political aspirations. We'll have more in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from volunteers who serve as teachers and role models for bilingual children. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Former Indiana University men's basketball coach Bob Knight is back in the news. According to a Washington Post investigation, Knight allegedly groped four female staff members during a speaking engagement in 2015 at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Knight was invited to speak at the Military Intelligence Agency by his longtime friend and current director of the NGA, Robert Cardillo. The Post reported that Knight and Cardillo met during Knight's early days coaching the Army men's basketball team at West Point. The four women interviewed by the Post alleged that Knight had groped them or otherwise physically engaged them in an inappropriate manner, including moments before Knight took the stage to deliver his address on leadership to the NGA staff. Several witnesses corroborated the victims' accounts, although Cardillo stated he was with Knight for almost the entirety of his visit and reportedly did not witness any inappropriate behavior. The allegations come as the Department of Defense is facing increasing pressure to reform its sexual harassment policies. Cardillo reportedly told the Post that the allegations put him in an awkward position, as some of the victims may have not felt comfortable coming forward due to his close personal relationship with Knight and may have feared retaliation. Knight denied any wrongdoing, and federal prosecutors decided not to file charges.
Yogi's Grill and Bar will close its doors for the last time at the end of this month. The popular sports bar sold their property to Indiana University last August and had until August of next year to vacate the property. Yogi's manager Patrick Cullen said the decision to close the business early was largely in deference to staff members.
You know, we're just at a good spot with our staffing where, you know, we have like five people who are leaving within a week of us closing anyways to move because they graduated last year and they're getting, you know, like regular jobs now. And it was, you know, do you staff up, run till graduation knowing that, you know, it's not looking promising to finding a new home, and then, you know, have to lay people off in the summer, or do you do it right now when, you know, we're able to reach out to people pretty quickly and, you know, get all of our staff that's staying in town placed with other jobs.
Cullen said the owners of Yogi's were originally looking at relocating the 25-year-old restaurant elsewhere in Bloomington, but high rental prices near the university forced them to close.
We've been looking for places and haven't really been successful in any solid locations that make sense, you know, size-wise, rent-wise. I mean, that was a factor in one of the locations was it would be a decent location for us, just they wanted three times too much rent for it than what we would be able to afford.
Indiana University spokespersons did not return phone calls by WFHB's broadcast deadline, and so far the university has not commented on its plans or what it paid for the property at 519 East 10th Street.
Bloomington's League of Women Voters is holding a gerrymander meander on Sunday, July 16th. The 1.8-mile walk, which begins at Childs Elementary, serves as a tongue-in-cheek birthday celebration for the 1812 governor of Massachusetts, Elbridge Gerry. Gerry was one of the first documented politicians to manipulate voter district lines for political gain, and subsequently lent his name to what we now refer to as gerrymandering. Bloomington League of Women Voters President Kate Cruikshank said she hopes the event will bring attention to the absurdity of Indiana's district lines.
We have chosen a spot in Monroe County where District 60, District 61, and District 62 come together in kind of a very peculiar way. And when you go to that area and you actually walk around and look at it, you think, well, why should these people over here, if you're facing north, why should these people over here on the right be in District 60, which goes all the way up to the Marion County line? And then these people who are sort of just ahead of me on the right would be in District 60. And then these people over here on the left, and I'm not moving, right? I'm standing still. These people on the left would be in District 62, which extends way west and south. It's just very peculiar because their interests would be the same, but they're split among three different representatives. So it really works against the democratic process.
According to the Associated Press, Indiana House Republicans benefited from gerrymandering in the 2016 election, although they averaged 57.6% of the vote in the 100 districts across Indiana. They won or retained 70 seats in the House of Representatives. At the congressional level, Republicans earned 58.6% of the vote, but won 77.8% of the seats, more than 10% above expectations. Cruikshank says gerrymandering like this can lead voters to ask, why bother?
When you have one party controlling both houses and the governorship in a state, you have the possibility of drawing districts so that the voters of the other party are kept just below the 50% line within each district. So you could have a district where 49% of them are of the opposition party, the one that's being suppressed, and those people are essentially disenfranchised. I mean, their votes will never count because the dominant party will win. And you have in Indiana, I think we had nearly a third of our districts in this last election in 2016 where there was no opposition. So people are not going to put out the money to try and mount a campaign when the district lines are drawn such that it's going to be almost impossible.
Cruikshank says the League of Women Voters supports the idea of a citizen-led commission that would be in charge of drawing district lines.
In the last legislative session, a bill was introduced in the House. It was House Bill 1014, and it laid out the basics of what that commission would look like, who would be on it, how the appointments would be made to a pool from whom people would be selected, who could not serve on it, the processes that would be gone through to come up with maps, incredible online capability for public input and public suggestions for drawing maps. It was the result of 2 years of work by an interim study committee chaired by Jerry Tor in the House of Representatives. Jerry is a Republican, I should note, did a wonderful job on that, but the votes just weren't there to get it out of committee.
Cruikshank and the League of Women Voters say they hope the bill can be refined in time for the next legislative session. In the meantime, they hope to inform as many people as possible through their gerrymander meander. Meeting time is July 16th at 2 p.m. at Childs Elementary. More information is available at bmclwv.org.
Applications are now being accepted for vacant seats on Bloomington's Commission on Hispanic and Latino Affairs. Qualified applicants are Monroe County residents who have expertise or interest in quality of life issues regarding the Hispanic Latino community, or those who represent organizations serving the Hispanic Latino community here in Bloomington. Members of the commission help develop action committees that address challenges about access to health, employment, and public safety. They also promote public solutions in response to the challenges facing the community. Members network with local groups such as La Casa at IU and celebrate Latino-Hispanic history in Bloomington and the greater U.S. The city recommends potential applicants attend a commission meeting before applying. The commission meets the first Wednesdays each month at 5:30 p.m. in the McCloskey Conference Room at City Hall. More information is available at the city's website, bloomington.in.gov. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. Rise to Run is a national organization working at the grassroots level to install confidence and skill in young women with political aspirations. The organization's local branch has been holding a series of information sessions. Last week's session drew a crowd of 45 women in a range of ages. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn attended last week's session and talked with a few of the attendees afterward about their aspirations.
Emma Cannon has long dreamed of working in politics, but until recently she hasn't thought of herself as confident enough to pursue it.
When you're a kid, there are always like little boys that are always saying like, oh, I'm going to be president when I grew up. And I would have been someone to have said that like when they were a little kid, but I guess I always thought, oh, well, I can't do that. It wasn't even a conscious thought, really. It was just subconsciously I thought, oh, well, I can't do that someday or anything like that. And then when I saw in the last election, I saw Hillary Clinton gaining so much success and she got so close. And that really just, that was a wake-up call for me, like, oh, my gosh, I can do that. She did that.
A recent high school graduate, Cannon attended last week's information session for Rise to Run, an organization working to get young, progressive-minded women to run for office. Rise to Run's approach is to build a community of young women at the grassroots level and train them, providing an advisory council of experienced women to mentor them along the way. The numbers for women running for office is dismal nationally. Just 20% of congresspersons are women, and only 25% of women hold state elected positions. Indiana has sent less than 10 women to Congress during its state history. Rise to Run estimates the average age of women entering politics is 47. They aim to change that by focusing on younger women, high school and college age, up to 30 years of age. The organization named Bloomington as one of its pilot hubs last May. Rachel Guglielmo is co-coordinator of the local organization. She thinks there are many young women like Cannon.
We recognize that already in high school, young women are receiving implicit and sometimes explicit messages that they are less able or less capable to engage in politics. And we think that it's important to start that young, building their confidence and building their skills and building their sense that political engagement is a viable option for them.
Guillermo says the training given the organization's mentees, or risers, will include a primer in basic civics as well as a primer in intersectional feminism.
We recognize that For young women entering politics, there are barriers that we have to confront and we have to break down. And some of those barriers have to do with the history of women's engagement in politics in this country, with barriers that extend beyond just being a woman, but a woman of color or a woman with a disability. All of us have multiple aspects to our identities, and feminism needs to be inclusive and able to recognize and help us confront and deal with all of those dimensions and all of those aspects of life as a woman that could present barriers to running for office.
Emma Cannon says she's looking to Rise to Run to give her the confidence she needs to enter the political sphere.
I want to be able to speak confidently in political engagements. I want to gain the skills, and I want to gain a network of people that I can really communicate with and learn from, so that when I do eventually decide to run for office, I'll have a support system and I will have had all these skills that I've gained through Rise to Run. And I want to be part of the national training thing, because I feel like that would really be a huge opportunity for me and many other women, of course.
IU graduate Lily Ross has already had a bit of a primer on civics and confidence building by working on two political campaigns. Ross's parents were Bernie and Hillary supporters. She says advocacy was ever present in her mind, but she never considered working in politics until she volunteered on Elizabeth Warren's 2012 Senate campaign. She said the experience gave her focus and energy.
I think I literally probably went through every major that they offered. And then, as soon as I stepped in a campaign office, it just all kind of clicked. And I was like, oh, this is it. You know, there's a very electrifying feeling in campaign offices. I'd say, you know, organized chaos. And it just made sense to me. And I really fell in love with it.
Both Lily Ross and Emma Cannon hope to make it to the national level of Rise to Run grooming, which begins in January. At the national level, they'll get additional coaching on how to deal with nasty campaigns. Guglielmo says the training is designed for that age group.
I can say with a fair amount of confidence that we'll be taking them through practical exercises. We'll be practicing taking an interview and confronting hostile line of questioning, practicing debate. You're in a debate and you are asked confronted with let's just say lack of kindness or lack of consideration in your debating partner. You have to know how to deal with that. And there are techniques, and I think that rather than see that as a reason to disengage, we want our young women to feel confident that they know what to do when that happens.
I asked Lily and Emma whether they would be put off by the prospect of being embroiled with opposition who play dirty.
No, not at all. It actually excites me more than anything, I think.
No. If anything, it makes it revs me up, if anything, because I would say I'm very competitive by nature, and the idea that someone would perhaps try to smear my reputation or anything like that, that would, if anything, make me want to fight harder.
To support their mentees, Guglielmo says the organization is building a community of mentors as well.
So we're trying to build a community here. It's about the young women that we're supporting, but it's also about connecting them with the older women in their lives and in their communities who have been through some of these same things before, who have confronted some of these same issues and who have learned from their experience and who are eager to share it.
Monroe County Treasurer Jessica McClellan was one of several more experienced women who attended last week's meeting with the goal of mentoring. McClellan was 37 when she launched her campaign for the treasurer's seat, younger than the average age a woman enters politics nationally and a little older than Rise to Run's target audience. It was her first campaign for elected office. As a self-described introvert, McClellan's message for aspiring politicians is, you don't have to be an extrovert to run for office.
Where I feel like I can help young people is when, while they're growing and they're trying to learn about who they are and where they fit into the process of who they want to become, they don't have to hold themselves back. They don't have to say, oh, I'm not that kind of person who would run for office because I'm kind of quiet or I'm kind of shy or I'm an introvert. You can still do it if you are that kind of person. We need all kinds of people to run for office, and because once you win your election, it's a completely different job, and your personality may be better suited to doing the job that you want to run for than say, an extrovert who's just really, really good at talking all day.
When asked about the long-term prospects of progressive-minded women turning red states to blue, everyone I interviewed for this story was optimistic. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Hueso.
And I'm Vanessa Elias. And we're with La Escuelita para Todos. For me, it started off being research related. So I'm a PhD student in the Spanish and Portuguese department. And so I study the children of Latino immigrants, particularly in their Spanish development. So when I found out about the program, I liked the aspect of just being able to give back to this community that has helped me professionally. And when I got there, I really enjoyed seeing the kids, you know, use their Spanish and be able to learn more. Because one of the problems that we have with Latino children is that once they enter the school system, they lose a lot of their Spanish. So that's what we're trying to do with La Escuelita, is prevent that loss of Spanish.
My interest in it, how I got involved, is obviously very different. I do a lot of volunteer work with the Latino community on campus. I wanted to expand that into bringing my services or my skills to the local community.
My parents were born and raised in Mexico, and they came over to the United States. So I was actually born and raised in Florida. It's very difficult for me to know which exactly was my first language. So it's very similar to the students that we tutor, because many of their parents are immigrants, and so they were born here in the United States, or they came over when they were very young. I see a lot of myself in them.
I do too, and actually I wished I would have had La Escuelita when I was growing up, because I learned both Spanish and English. My mom and grandma are from El Salvador. In the house with my mom, it was mostly English, but with my grandmother, I had to speak Spanish. I started school and I began to lose it because my mom would speak English to me. I see La Escuelita and what it does to really encourage the children to keep their language, to learn, to develop their language skills. It would have been great if I had something like that when I was younger. I think that La Escuelita, what it does, it helps students to be proud of their heritage. Making students proud that they can speak another language, that they can communicate better with their family, and not be ashamed of being different, right? That definitely, it makes me appreciate an organization like this, right? That it goes beyond just developing Spanish literacy, you know? It connects with the families, it connects with one's identity, right, with the student's identity, so that especially at a young age, they can grow up knowing that it's wonderful to be different. So in January, right, we had the Women's March. I was feeling very conflicted of whether or not I would go to DC or go to Indianapolis to participate in this march, and I didn't. I went to La Escuelita. I felt that was my way of making change, right? I went to La Escuelita, I paired up the kids with their volunteers, I prepared the snacks, I talked to the parents, talked to the students while they were waiting to get for their class, and it was a regular day. Nothing special, but that's when it clicked to me that I'm supposed to be here. This is where I will make the change. This is where we're serving our future generation, right? And this is the place where I need to be to make any kind of change.
Thanks for listening.
My name is Stephanie Hueso.
And I'm Vanessa Elias.
And we're with La Escuelita para Todos.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. It's almost back to school time for teachers, and Teachers Warehouse needs your volunteer help to get ready for the rush. Come help with sorting and shelving donations and assisting teachers with transporting their items. You don't need previous horse experience to volunteer with People and Animal Learning Services. Come find out more at their upcoming volunteer training for individuals interested in participating in PALS Therapeutic Equine programs. Learn more about responsibilities including leading horses and sidewalking for clients during riding sessions. Or staff the front desk, assist with special events, and provide a warm and welcoming atmosphere for every person that comes in the door at the Recovery Engagement Center. This is a great way to provide direct services and help those in our community that are overcoming addiction. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Lindsay Jones, Cole Stinson, and Wes Martin. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.